Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 538 for comics originally released on November 29th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Mystic You. This is a three-issue, I believe, miniseries that's bimonthly.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that's interesting.
Other thing that's kind of interesting about it, and I hadn't really factored this in when we picked it, it's a $5.99 book, and people are wondering, it's like, I'd have gotten it anyway. Yeah, I would have gotten it anyways for a couple of reasons, but that $5.99 is an indicator of a much longer page count than average.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really factored that in on my reading time, so it was, I'm starting to read it, and it's like, this is a heavier book. It is written by, Elisa Quitney, who's a name I don't recognize. Art is by Mike Norton, which is a name I absolutely recognize. He's an awesome guy, terrific artist. So getting an extra length book by him, very pleased on that. If I had to sum up this title with a high pitch, kind of a concept or whatever, Mystic You is essentially it's DC's Hogwarts.
Yep. Very much so.
And I don't mean that in a derivative, geez, they couldn't come up with anything original way. It's just the closest analog. And it's, I couldn't tell what years it covers. It looked like it was more of a college sort of a thing. Well, Mystic University, go figure, definitely college. Whereas Hogwarts seemed to be kind of where you would go before coming here, maybe.
Yeah, it was interesting because it was the malevolence event that we were going away from 7 years in the past. We're not sure if that's current. I'm assuming that's current DC time, so 7 years before present, right?
That's what I took it as.
Okay.
And I thought starting off with a retcon like that, fascinating approach. And it kind of sets the stakes of this is such a big deal, the heroes didn't even survive it the first time. And it kind of loose as to exactly what's going on, what the malevolence is, who the malevolence is, or whatever, but it comes out that the characters don't even know.
They've narrowed it down. Yeah. They think they've
it's
narrowed
one,
it
down. One of these new students.
Yes.
You know? And I actually have a theory as to who it is, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. I was surprised how many parallels I could draw between this and the Harry Potter stuff. You got the various teachers, the prophecies of things to come. So it's not arguably the most original of concepts, but man, they nailed it on the execution.
Hey, I like Harry Potter, and this has that same fun spirit to it, and so that can work.
Yeah, if you're gonna kind of borrow from something, borrowing from one of the most successful series of books in recent history, not a bad idea.
Nope.
And I think they avoided some of the pitfalls of the Harry Potter stuff. Because if you go back to the first book, there was a lot of, so-and-so get demerits of so many points for their house. And it's like, what does that all wind up being? It's all kind of meaningless, whatever. None of that, but you get the coolness of they're out of school for magic. What does that entail? Who are these characters? And none of the almost false, fake kind of conflict and whatnot of the sorting hat, the different houses. And I mean, it's a cool part of Harry Potter. Not something they should have brought in, not something they did bring in, but they took what was cool out of that concept of a school for sorcerers, sorceresses, and so forth. They pulled in the relevant aspects of the DC universe. And there were a ton of cool Easter eggs and references and whatnot in here that I really enjoyed. And I'm not even going to claim I got all of them. I'm sure there's some that I missed because I'm not as well steeped in the mystical side of the DC universe as I could be. Because frankly, some of that goes back to like the 60s and 70s and stuff like that. But I found this to be an exceedingly fun read. I thought that the extra page count really helped it out. It gave it more room to kind of grow and expand. I think if this had been kind of cut in half or down to regular issue size, it would have been, it would have been disappointing. It wouldn't have been enough. So I'm not crazy about the bi-monthly format, but the longer page count worked out well, so we'll see how that goes. I do question the concept again of a retcon, not so much as just how to start a story. I think that was actually kind of cool. But do we need to retcon the DC Universe right now? I mean, it's already a little kind of in flux, I would argue, with what's going on with Rebirth and whatever. But I'm okay with it, given that this was a solid read.
Yeah, I think it fits in a corner of DC that you can probably get away with doing some things there that maybe you wouldn't in, say, a Batman book or something. I was thinking the same thing about, why don't they just, split this in half and, around page 26 or so, and that's right where we first meet Plop, and mm-hmm. There's kind of a reveal of one of the characters' power sets, and that wouldn't have been a bad place to stop, but it wouldn't have been but to your point, it wouldn't have been a great place to stop, and it would have been just okay up to that point, whereas having this extra story really pulls you in and gets you excited for it. I do question what I remember in 2 months going into this next chapter, but this chapter itself was so much fun, and yeah, I felt a Harry Potter vibe, and all the younger characters and introducing and getting to know them was lots of fun. And I have my theory on who the bad guy might be, and it really sets the stage for what we're going to get. I think this was a really cool book, and I'm glad we got a chance to read it.
So who do you think the malevolence is?
I think it's the kid with the diamond in his turban.
Really? You think it's Sargon the Sorcerer?
Yeah.
Who I believe that is.
Yeah.
Okay. Definite possibility.
Well, it's one of five, right? It's got to be one of those five.
No, actually, I don't think it does.
Oh, okay. I was playing inside the parameters of what they were laying out there. But yeah, I guess it could be the person who's accusing them of being one of the five, and maybe we should just kill them all.
So at the beginning, Rose and Zatanna kind of do the 7-year rewind. I'm going to say it takes them out of the running.
Yes.
So Zatanna's off free and clear. Rose Psychic, who's kind of the sidekick of Dr. Occult, is looking at trying to investigate this. So I don't think it's her or Dr. Occult. On the last page, we get kind of which of it is it? And we got our five leads of June Moon, who's the Enchantress, who's in Suicide Squad these days. And there's something about her look that keeps reminding me of Nico from Runaways, and I'm not quite sure what it is about that.
And she was a delight. She was a delightful character in this. Really
interesting. Probably one of the best uses of the character that I've read.
Yeah, I really thought she was well-rounded and interesting, and a lot of facets to her, and I really liked her. I thought she was great.
Well, and like the flip between June and the Enchantress, I thought was really well done in a couple of scenes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of the other ones, as you mentioned, is Sargon, so that's your pick. We've got Sebastian Faust, who's the son of Felix Faust, who's a JLA villain. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, what's the other girl's name? I'm blanking on that at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know.
She's the one I couldn't get the most, really good handle on there. Morales is the last name. I'm trying to think when and where they gave the first name.
She was the one that was with the hipster when he got swallowed and his hat was all that was left.
Yeah, she's the one who had like the funky goo or whatever. So I'm not sure what's up with that. I think though it's Plop.
Yeah.
Because he's new to the school and he doesn't seem to be one of the ones they're focusing on. So I think that we were being led to believe it was one of these other five, Zatanna included. And I don't think it is. Now we'll find out in, 4 months time or some such.
And because he was formed out of basically the detritus of some of the various students, I guess, and the stuff that went down the drain and the magic that coalesced there. Is that my understanding of where he comes from?
It's hard to tell how much of that is how much and something else was just kind of in the pipes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I like that there's a mystery to kind of, theorize about or to speculate on. That's always cool. There's plenty of material in here. Just if you like kind of the mystical, magical corner of the DC universe and the one that kind of butts up on the edge of what had been Vertigo, And they're pulling in characters that are hardcore DC characters, such as Cain and Abel from House of Mystery and House of Secrets. These are also the kinds of characters that tended to veer off into the Vertigo stuff once Vertigo was around. So this is a side of the edge of the DC universe they don't really explore necessarily all that much, all that often. We had, what was it, Demon Knights and what was the replacement title in the New 52? We've had a few others that are dealing with some of this stuff. But I loved just even tiny cameos of, like, the Demon, Frankenstein, and some of the other mystical characters over the years of at DC.
Weren't some of these characters in Justice League Dark, at least as players, maybe not featured heroes?
But absolutely, they, in and some out. Of them were.
Yeah, and the House definitely was.
The House definitely was, but yeah. It originated with either House of Mystery or House of Secrets. I forget which one they were in. But like Xanadu, Merlin, Baron Winters, some of these go back decades and just haven't had a whole lot of room to get showcased. And I thought this was a really good job with them. It was a lot of fun. It was terrific art, as I would expect. My only real question on this is, why could they not have waited maybe 2 more months to release it to where this would have come out when issue 2 comes out, 2 would have come out a month later, 3 would come out when 3 would come out? I mean, it's probably easier on retailers to you know, have only one on kind of pre-order at a time or whatever. So I get that, and with a $5.99 price tag, that's probably a smart move. But I think a lot of it for me is going to come down to, when I read the second issue, how much of this issue do I remember?
Yeah, was Supergirl being super also bi-monthly? That was the same kind of number of pages and format, I think.
I think it might have been.
Yeah. It must have been a little more successful than I remember, sales-wise. Maybe they just decided to go back to the well. Another fun part was, I really like Zatanna's origin, which, you know, stuff with her dad. I thought that was great. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that story.
How familiar are you with Zatanna?
Her interacting with Constantine and his book and the Justice League Dark stuff.
Okay, because back in like the 70s or whatever, she showed up in a number of different titles asking various Justice Leaguers for help finding her dad. So that would have taken place after what she does here, but obviously before the current day or whatever, if it happened at all in this universe, which of course is open to question. But then that's kind of what led into her becoming a member of the Justice League. She'd already worked with half the team or whatever by that point. So I thought that was a nice kind of subtle callback. And what I loved is they had a lot of these Easter eggs, a lot of these, oh, there's some other stuff, but not to the point of, oh my God, it's nothing but Easter eggs, or I don't get it, I'm lost. And again, pulling in Plop surprised the heck out of me. That was the name of a humor series DC published in the mid-70s.
Oh, okay.
And the basic thing was they could have called it anything, and if it's good, people would buy it. According to the Wikipedia page. I don't think I've got a single issue of Plop. I don't remember it, but I think Sergio Aragonés was one of the people connected to it.
Okay.
So, okay. Couldn't have been bad.
Now, the spell that Zatanna and Rose did that did the 7-year rewind and allowed Rose to remember, but Zatanna not to, is that the first instance of that you've ever seen in DC, or is that something that they've gone to the well before on?
This sort of, with the Mystics doing a time rewind?
Yes.
That I don't think I've seen before, but an in-continuity retcon like this, I've definitely seen before.
But it was interesting. It had a uniqueness to it because Rose could maintain her memories, but yet Zatanna could not and didn't have any. So it was an interesting way to do that jump.
And well, the other thing that was kind of cool with that is Rose and Dr. Occult share a body, which if you noticed at the beginning, Dr. Occult is dying, and then Rose kind of replaces him there.
Oh, okay.
And then later, when we get Rose in, I guess, the headmaster's office or whatever, having a conversation, she's talking to Dr. Occult, but he's in a mirror, so she's looking at her reflection and seeing him.
Oh, I did not nice pick up on that.
Yeah, it was subtle. It was really well done. And that's one of the things where Norton as an artist is his stuff tends to have a little bit more kind of that acting kind of a thing with the characters. And there's a little bit more subtleness in some of the stuff that you can kind of miss over. You don't necessarily lose out on the story, but you may miss a little tidbit that you get more out of if you catch, if you know what I mean. He's never unclear with the storytelling, but there's sometimes a bit more to gain if you pay a little bit more attention, a higher level to the story or something like that. And I thought it was a lot of fun. I definitely recommend this. For me, this was a solid A, and I'm excited to see the mystical characters finally used properly in the DC universe after, frankly, decades of them being kind of relegated over just to the Vertigo area.
Yeah, a wonderful writing, and the art is lovely, and the characters are all fun and interesting, and it is an A from me, and I recommend it, something to check out.
Cool. Shall we move over to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is X-Men Blue number 1. It is part of the Crosstime Capers.
16,
yeah, sorry. It's part 1 of Crosstime Capers. It's number 16 of X-Men Blue. This is one of those, they go to the legacy stuff and they didn't bother pulling in all the numbering from, Young X-Men or, yeah, All New X-Men.
All New X-Men, yeah.
When they brought these characters back.
Why not?
Whatever. It's so confusing with the numbering. So when I got to the previously on page, I'm going through it and I'm like, well, this is kind of interesting because I'm looking at the side where they've got the roll call of characters. Nice when they do that. That way you can kind of go into the story knowing who's who if for some reason you don't. But Bloodstorm is mentioned in the previously in, but isn't on the roll call. Well, that's an odd, you know, kind of oversight or whatever. Oh, I guess she's not going to be in this issue. Okay, that would make sense. Whatever. Flip the page, and I don't think it was the first scene, but this another page flip. Boom, there she is. Man, she needs a better agent. She's not even getting mentioned there on the front. This is where some of my stories, or not my stories, my questions about the story just got voluminous. Because she's from another timeline. But in this scene, she's implying that she still has a psychic link with Dracula.
Yeah.
Well, wait a sec. If she's from another timeline, wouldn't that psychic link be with the Dracula of that other timeline? And if not, I mean, it shouldn't exist. I'm not even sure if the other timeline exists, to be honest. I don't think so. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But shouldn't, if she still has the psychic link, wouldn't it be with the Dracula of this timeline? And if so, I'm kind of wondering what he thinks of that. Because from his point of view, 2-3 issues ago of this title, he's fine. He's got whatever he's got psychic links to. And then bam, she shows up. And he would now have a psychic link to somebody he's never met. I don't know. It was puzzling. I also thought that she happened to see the world in shades of red like Cyclops. It's like, how many parallels do we need to draw here? Both have been X-Men team leaders, both have been this, both have been that. It was feeling very heavy-handed. And then we start getting things happening with characters popping out of existence, time-changing or whatever. And I was just, frankly, getting more and more perplexed. Because, I'll admit, I am unclear if these young X-Men are from the main timeline or not. I think we've seen very, very clear, incontrovertible evidence both ways. And the title's selling in the, I don't know, 40 to 50K range. So ending the run in favor of a better selling X title? Not out of the question. But we've seen solicits for an arc after this with these characters. So it's not like I think they're actually going to put these characters back in time and go in some other direction with X-Men Blue. So I don't really know where they're going of is time changing or not. The title is a riff on an Excalibur storyline that was a lot of fun when that team spent, I'm going to say, 8 or 9 issues bouncing around time and encountering different characters from both different points in time and different timelines. It was a lot of fun, but so was all of Excalibur. This is just a lot of teen angst X-Men stuff in both good ways and bad. And it's one of those things that by the time it got to the end, I'm like, you're doing some interesting stuff here. I don't know where you're going. I don't know if you guys know where you're going as a company with these characters. And then we end up with a tease of X-Men 2099 characters, which is cool. Haven't seen them in ages. Are we going to get them for more than an issue or two? Do I want them for more than an issue or two? Don't know. I thought this was good, but it felt a little kind of all over the place. And frankly, if you're a fan of the original 5 X-Men, you're reading this book. If you're not, there are other X-Men books to be reading. I'll be honest, I'd be a little hard-pressed at the moment as to say which one I would really recommend.
This might be the best one.
I'd argue Weapon X.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it's unclear to me.
Yeah, I enjoyed All New X-Men a lot. And I keep hoping that this kind of recaptures some of that. I have dropped off it and hop back on, and when new story arcs appear, and give it another shot. And it's not quite the same, and it doesn't have that same fun. And this is the same Cyclops that's in Champions, right? The young Cyclops that's in here?
Yes.
God, it's so differently executed in the artist's mind on how young this kid should be. And all these kids should be younger than they are, I think. But that kind of bothers me, and that should not happen. But we've had these discussions before, and I've got to get over my Cyclops drawing it problems.
I find it interesting that sort of a thing, different artists' interpretations of a character, really seems to throw you a bit. But you're so easygoing on, is this in continuity? Is this not?
It must be
separate continuities.
I know.
It doesn't make sense. Like, what phases you doesn't phase me, and vice versa. It's not right or wrong. Just it does confuse me at times.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I can just go, oh well, comics with some things, but not when I, in my mind, I think these should be younger looking people, and I hate it when they're not. And but yeah, this doesn't have that same fun that the all new X-Men did. And these characters are, this was okay, but yeah, I didn't get the same enjoyment out of it that I want from an X book of these young characters that should be more fun. They should be more fun, like Mystic U characters should be.
Yeah, it should be a little lighthearted, and I felt the storytelling could have and should have been a little clearer. Like a page or two before the end, we get kind of the lightning storm over that time machine that Magneto somehow magically created. Mm-hmm. And I guess it gets wiped out of existence. It no longer exists or something. I couldn't tell where it was going. Or where they were going with that page. How about that? Because I think what we had seen elsewhere when characters kind of vanished and stuff, as if they'd been wiped from time, it didn't look that way.
Yeah.
It was an inconsistent approach to the visual storytelling style that confused me a little.
And a lot of this, you know, Colin Bunn writes a lot of stuff. And he's a well-employed writer in the comics world, and he writes for multiple publishers and has a lot of titles spinning at any given time. And I think sometimes that is to his detriment, and some of his stories feel like they're a little surfacey and just getting from point A to point B. And there was some fun stuff in here, but not enough to really, really latch onto, really get a sense for which characters we should be caring about and what should be driving us forward into the next issue. And it just didn't quite hit.
Yeah, that's very much how I felt. It wasn't bad, but there was an aspect of it was a little hard to connect to some of it, a little unclear on some of the storytelling, and I didn't dislike it, but I wasn't as sucked into it and pulled into it as I felt I should have been. I wasn't excited by it either.
Yeah.
And I think this had all the kind of things that could have and should have made me think, wow, I can't wait to the next issue. I'm going to go with a C+ on this. And I really don't think it's the best example of Colin Bunn's work. I'd have to go look at other stuff by this artist, Tony Salas, again, his name's not ringing any bells with me. I'm sure I've seen and read lots of his work, and I'm sure some of it's better. This was okay. There were a few places the visual stuff, the art could have and should have been clearer or better, and this isn't the best use of these characters.
Yeah, that's too bad. It's the start of a story arc that I don't feel like I need to finish. The X-Men 2099 reveal was okay, but it wasn't that exciting for me, and the whole thing was a little lackluster. I'm going to give it an average grade and go with a C.
This is one of those cases where I think my attitude on this story would have been different if it was coming out monthly as presumably a 6-part story versus however many parts it is, and two issues a month because I've seen solicits for the next arc. If I hadn't, I would at least be thinking, well, maybe they are going to put these characters back in time and kind of wrap it up or something.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So there's no stakes for you at all.
None. None whatsoever. And they've been wishy-washy as to if these characters are younger versions of the X-Men we're with or not. Because at one point, one of them almost, I think a Cyclops almost died and the older Cyclops vanished. And people are like, oh, what happened there? Oh, well, we've revived Cyclops. Older Cyclops is now back. But then they've done other things to very clearly show that, nope, these aren't the ones that are the younger versions of our timeline. So I have no idea what's going on there. And frankly, they've played this out for so long. I'm now just assuming that these are effectively natives of this time period. We'll see what happens. Some of us will. I don't know if you will.
I will not. I will not. Well, check out that next story arc that is solicited. That so where nothing actually happens in this one that matters.
Yeah, probably. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
This is Sword of Ages number 1 from IDW. And this is written by Gabriel Rodriguez. Art by him too, yes?
Yes.
Writing, illustrating, doing everything but the colors and the letters.
Usually a red flag.
This was billed as kind of like an Arthurian tale in space or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this first page I thought was, okay, this is fun. This is interesting. Then second page, it's like we flip over from a comic story to an illustrated story. Tons of captions, lots of exposition. And that only goes for a page or two, but then we go back to comic story, and my God, these characters are so talkative. I mean, there's paragraphs in these word balloons. And I don't know if I just got worn out early in this story, but it's so verbose. It's so expository. It's so wordy that I was tuning out. They've got the, you know how I complain about Christopher Priest and how, like, on every page of, first page of a new scene, a panel's devoted to kind of a tag for the scene?
Yeah, yes, with Stang or whatever, yeah.
And here we're getting the On the Road, the Elder Guardians, and it's in the gutter, but it's the same idea. You know, gathering adventurers, as if it is the slug line for the scene. Now, on the one hand, that's kind of cool and convenient because you could then presumably take all of those and realize there's just not that many story beats here or that many scenes or whatever. But it didn't work for me.
Well, you'd think with all that extra stuff in there that it would be a really clear and easy to understand story that you could easily follow. And it probably was for you. But as I was reading it, I got almost to the end. And I'm like, wait a minute. What happened to the family in the spaceship? And so I had to go back and read it from the beginning again. And I'm like, oh, that's who this girl is, I guess? She just grew up with...
The unborn daughter.
That was the unborn daughter that we never saw in the spacecraft.
Yes.
And then she was talking to animals for a while. And then, then there were some raids. And I don't know who's good and who's bad. And what? We've got a slave... slave master monkeys, and it's kind of wacky and it's not really wacky in a fun way. It's wacky and kind of there's an awful lot of moving parts here that I don't really know where we're going, and it just didn't come together in some kind of story where I can wrap my mind around what I should like here.
I would agree, and particularly having seen because it was on the Slack channel interview about this on how it's an Arthurian tale in space and all that. And so I didn't really read the articles. I scanned. They had a nice little trailer for the comic. I thought that was kind of cool. But even though there's tons of setup here, I wasn't really seeing the King Arthur aspect to this.
No, none at all.
I mean, presumably the girl is the Arthurian equivalent. Ooh, I don't know about the Excalibur or any of the other stuff. I mean, I'm cool with an King Arthur in space kind of retelling. I loved Camelot 3000 back in the day, and I recommend that. Brian Bolan, I'm blanking. Mike W. Barr was the writer, maybe? I could be wrong on that. I don't remember. I should have looked it up. Brilliant series. If you haven't read it, it came out mid-80s, and there were some delays near the end, like about a year or so on that 12th issue. So by the time it came out, because I was working at a store at the time, By the time it came out, people were like, what is this 12th issue? I haven't heard of this title before. It's, oh yeah, well, it's a great title, but this was before Egregious Lateness was kind of an industry acceptable thing.
Mike Barr.
Brilliant stuff. Highly recommend it. That's kind of where my head was at when I heard Arthurian in Space. I mean, I wasn't expecting it to be as good because I thought that was a pretty high bar, no pun intended. But this just didn't work for me. I didn't connect with the story. I don't know what was going on. If you quizzed me after I read this as to, you know, okay, what were the high points? Who are the main characters? How do you see the parallels and stuff to King Arthur or whatever, if there even are any? I would not have done well on a pop quiz on this.
Yeah. I didn't think it was a well-executed story. Art's okay. It's pretty solid, but
art's fine.
But the story kind of is lacking. This is the artist from Lock and Key, I guess. Is that right?
I thought it was the creator of
co-creator. Yeah, so I don't know if he was. I can't remember if he was the artist or the writer. I'm guessing artist.
Writer, artist. The way they have it in the solicit, courtesy of writer, artist, Lock and Key co-creator Gabriel Rodriguez.
Yeah, so you could lean either way. But yeah, Lock and Key's much better. This is not great. It's not horrible. I mean, it is have some nice art in it, but characters that interact and you're not really sure who's who, and it's not enough of a hook to say, yeah, I gotta see where this goes next. And most of us are to the point where we need something in a first issue that says, this is why this is awesome, and this is why you should go seek out the next issue and put on your pull list. Don't wait for the trade. You must read this because it's so awesome. I don't even want to wait for the trade on this. I don't care. It had a chance. It had its chance, and it didn't stick the landing, and most of the flight was bumpy. So yeah, for me, I don't recommend this, and I'm around a D plus.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm at a C minus on this. I think a lot of what you say is right on the money. It's not one that I'm thinking, wow, I've got to get more of. It's also not one I would say, oh my God, you've got to avoid at all costs. While it didn't work particularly well for me, the art is good. I see some merits in it, but it's one of those that, it's certainly not one I would say go seek out. But I've also got the second issue on pre-order, and it's a 5-issue miniseries, so I've got to make the decision, do I just carry it through or do I stop? And at this point, I'm probably not going to pre-order. I'll read the second one when it comes, but unless that one is just really works for me, I don't see the point in continuing this for the 5 issues.
I'm surprised your OCD allows you to do that. I am surprised you don't have a tipping point where if it's under 6 issues and I've already pre-ordered 2, I go ahead and get them all.
I did say I'd have to make the decision, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. That's true.
I don't know where the OCD is going to weigh in on this one.
I'm not saying you have OCD, but...
I'm not saying I don't. I don't think you wind up with 64,000 comics plus...
Without a little
of that, or a lot of that even. It's, again, very pretty art. If the concept is to do a King Arthur kind of a slant in space, that concept is cool.
Yeah.
It's just, and part of it is, by the time I got to this, I'd already read Mystic U, which was an oversized book. I'd read X-Men Blue, which was a little, where the hell are they going with this? So by the time I hit a fairly wordy issue for this last one, it may have just been that I was just kind of tired and worn out or something. But I don't really think on a rereading of this, I'm going to think, wow, I really misjudged it on the first pass.
Yeah.
Because I've had that happen. I think when I reread, Stargate Atlantis comic, after rewatching the ending of it, it's like, wow, this was a completely different read. It worked for me. And I'm sure if I go back to Doomsday Clock number 1, knowing going in, hey, it's a Watchmen number 13, essentially, or Watchmen V2 number 1.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have a different attitude on that.
It is all very mood related and a state of mind and just what we're in the mood for, I think, at the time, too. That all plays into it.
Yeah, but at this point, I don't see Sword of Ages as something for me that I need to continue with, but it's one of those things, if it's part of a bundle or some such on the order I do, maybe that'll get it, maybe not, don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
So, since last week, I've been doing a little bit of reading.
And?
You have no idea how much I would love to say, wow, I'm totally current, you know, and stuff. Can't do that. The shipment I got just came yesterday, of which I've read, I believe, three items. And we just talked about three of them. But other than that, I've got a total, or including the stuff that came, I've got a total of 49 comics.
Hey,
to read.
That's manageable.
Yeah, 41 of them are ones that, maybe I'm miscounting on this, but most of them are the ones that just came. I've got about a dozen or so that I didn't get through over the weekend. I would have loved to have, because then I could have said, I'm caught up except for the current week, but didn't quite happen. But yeah, I read, I don't know, 167 or something.
And they're all a blur.
A lot of them are, yeah. There were a couple of things that were pleasant surprises. Caught up on Valiant, finally read most of the Catalyst Prime stuff. Some of what they're doing there is actually really interesting.
Okay.
Their Excel or whatever is a fairly different take on a speedster, which I found enjoyable. A bit thought-provoking as to, oh, well, that's a new approach. Made sense. And trying to think what else. The Astonisher. Some of what they're doing, they've got some name creators. Joe Casey, Jamal Igle, to name but a few. I'm surprised that they've got as many books out as quick as they have, etc. But a part of this is Lionforge is just moving ahead aggressively on comics.
Yeah.
And I think they've got some great stuff. I also read Ghost Money from the Magnetic Press imprint from them. Really enjoyed that. Hadn't realized it was a translation of something else. That I think is highly relevant in so much as I find translations from other languages. It does bad things to the font size. English is just so verbose compared to some other languages. You've gotta shrink the font size a little bit. And that can be a little hard on my aging eyes. But yeah, ton of stuff I read.
Copperhead continues to be good.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying that one. I was racking my brain when you were saying, because we were talking about what the preferred X book should be, and I was thinking of the X-Men Blue, Gold, and Apocalypse of those three, and you went with Weapon X. I was like, well, if you're going into the family, I would go all new Wolverine. It's probably the most consistent good read to me. I don't know. But I haven't read a lot of Weapon X, so I'm going to have to check that out, I think.
I think Weapon X has better art, deeper story, and particularly the crossover they did with the Totally Awesome Hulk, I thought was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Are you enjoying Ennis's Punisher Platoon?
I am not reading.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's a Marvel book that you are not reading. Because it's a Max title. It doesn't count.
Max titles I very much avoid.
Gotcha. Okay.
They're very good at what they do, and that's not what I like.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense now.
It's just harder core. I'm squeamish. I'm not into that kind of stuff. I'm glad it's out there. I think it's great for people who are into it, but not what I want to read.
Gotcha. Did the second to last Elephant Men title?
Read that. Curious how they're going to wrap some stuff up.
Yeah, felt like that could have been the final issue. Kind of had a sense to it, but I'm curious what that final issue is. And
I think they've still got to wrap up the Hip Flask miniseries.
Oh, really?
Okay. That comes out like once every couple of years. I think there's only one issue left, but I'd have to double check that.
Oh, okay. I assume this was putting a bow on all of that.
I don't think so, but I don't know for certain.
And how was Fence?
I enjoyed Fence.
Okay.
I thought that was good. It's got kind of that manga feel, not so much visually, but storytelling wise. I mean, how many comics are there about fencing and fencing academies and whatnot?
Yeah.
None that I can think of.
Yeah.
But they sold the character. They sold the concept. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Still enjoying Metal and all its tie-ins.
I wish it would move a little faster.
Yeah. I kind of feel that way.
I'm tired of, the Plastic Man egg and nothing really happening with that and a few things like that. So I want to see where they go with it. I want to see what comes out of it. There have been some delays in the production on that. That's slowing down, I think, Sideways, The Terrifics, and maybe one or two other things, possibly, which is a little frustrating. But, you know, hey, it comes out when it comes out.
Now, coming out this week was Super Sons Annual with the animals. Did you read that one yet?
Did you catch the part where I've read three things this week and we've talked about three things this week?
All right, okay. So that means you have 41 things from this week. That was your shipment.
Believe so. Let me double check that real quick.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when I do some of my estimates, I miscount. I have a total of 49 items to be read, of which 38 are from this week.
Gotcha.
I've got some carryover stuff, but not too much.
Now, is the Nightwing New Order work for you?
I'm liking it. I thought some stuff in the latest issue was a lot of fun. I wish the art was a little bit better.
I gotcha.
And yeah. I think the series started a little stronger than it currently is, but I think it's fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying it as well. I definitely enjoy it better than the actual Nightwing proper. So I'm having more fun with it than I am a regular Nightwing, which I rarely read. So
speaking of the Nightwing character, as we record this on December 5th, I think it was on ICV2 this morning that I saw a promotional still or whatever for the Robin costume for the Titans series, and it looked good.
Oh, cool.
So I'm excited about that.
You would not check this out, but others might. I thought Dark Fang from Image Comics was really good. Little vampire-y meets Dollface type of take. Pretty cool. Unique. At least that first issue was. I really enjoyed it. And I think Generation Gone finished up nicely with its fifth issue. And I continue to enjoy Maestros.
Cool. Yeah, I'm not reading those. So let's see. Coming up, we've got the comic book page teleconference on December 16th at 7 p.m. Central Time. We do that on Skype. There's instructions on the forum on how to get in. The long and the short of it is I need to have your contact information. You need to chat me on Skype saying, hey, I'm available for the call, and I'll add you into the call.
Yeah.
And we talk about whatever we talk about. And certainly, from my standpoint, things are opening up a lot now that I'm more current on my reading. After that, I think the next major thing is the deadline for the yearly comic spotlight. We said,
Christmas.
The night of Christmas, yeah. So end of December 25th. And you snuck a new category in, didn't you?
Yeah, a listener on the forum, Nick's Picks, suggested a new miscellaneous category, which we thought was a pretty good idea. It's Most Improved. And he says it could be Most Improved Series or Writer or Publisher or Artist. It's kind of a wild card category, but in the Most Improved section, and you can kind of have fun with that. And so we hope you'll check that and all the categories out in our 2017 yearly Comic Spotlight forum post, and then post your picks for the year and your standout stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Always a lot of fun. Great idea for a new category. I've still got to figure out what my picks are going to be for any of it. I haven't even started thinking about that. And it's funny because I've been going kind of data driven on that the last year or two.
Yeah.
But because I've gotten behind, I've gotten a kind of a reading status spreadsheet versus my rating spreadsheet, just because it was faster to kind of keep track of how far behind I was and such and what I was behind on with this new spreadsheet. So I've got my ratings kind of split between two. So I need to kind of get that squared away soonish so I can use probably going to stick with the reading status one. It's just a lot easier to do things with. But I need to get that going. So I've got one place to go look up my ratings and what was my best rated, this, that, and the other. The advantage is with this one, I think I can get it to where I can, what was my favorite writer of the year? What got the highest ratings and such? I just got to see if I can work the Excel magic on that.
Oh, nice. If nothing else, the yearly comic spotlight serves as a goal for you to be current, at least at the start of the new year.
Yes. Well, it used to be that Comic-Con was that way, but it just, it's so hard to get prepared for that. So yeah, year end is what I'm trying to be. And like I said, with this week plus about a dozen others, it's just, as we record this, it's just a couple of days before the next set of numbers come out for me to crunch.
Oh yeah.
We've got the preview spotlight that's coming up this weekend. So by the time this goes out, I will have edited and assembled all that. Plus, I've got to then record the episodes for the Mayo report. So it's a busy week or so. So I may get a little further behind again, but I'm within reach of being able to be current by the end of the year. We'll see how that happens.
Yeah. I have faith. I have lots of faith that you're going to get there.
Yeah. It's a lot of good stuff to read. Next preview spotlight deadline after this episode is released is going to be, Saturday, January 6th, bright and early that morning. Again, there's tons of cool stuff coming out from all the publishers. Great way to start the new year off with, sending in some clips supporting the characters, creators, titles, and publishers you like. So hopefully everybody will do that. Also, the other thing, and I almost forgot about this, I want to thank, Chris, Drew, Eric, and Nicholas. We've had a massive upsurge in the number of donations to the podcast and the website over the last week or so, a little over. I thank Chris. He put a forum on he put a thread on the forum. Man, I just can't talk tonight. saying, hey, people should do that. And I appreciate that. I sink a lot of money into this between the comics I buy, the time I'm spending on this and whatnot. So getting a little back is appreciated. Certainly not mandatory, but it is one of the sorts of things that, does help keep the podcast running, not just financially, but it provides, the emotional incentive I need to keep this thing going.
Server space ain't cheap.
Service space ain't cheap, and five episodes a week, not easy.
You're up to five?
You're not five. Three. I don't know how many I'm doing. That's sleep deprivation. It's holy a bad smokes. Thing.
Give this man some money. I may edit that.
Yeah, so three episodes a week ain't easy, but it's fun to do. So anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Injustice 2 number 15 from DC, Amazing Spider-Man Venom Inc. Alpha number 1 from Marvel, and Mighty Crusaders number 1 from Archie Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.